Hello, welcome to another episode of Cadaver Gals, the show where we talk about the many ways people have died throughout history to cope with our own mortality. I'm your host, Gabby, along with Taylor and Nika. Say hi, guys.
Hello.
Hello. Hello, hello.
Oh my God, here we are. Before we start today, we've decided to slightly reformat the show where we're going to be only doing two stories per episode, but we're going to go into a little bit more depth and detail for each one. And we're also going to start ending with some survivalist tips of how helpful so that we can all continue our journey into life.
You never know. When you accidentally kill your husband, what do you do?
What do you do?
We'll tell you.
We're going to help you survive this new year.
Oh, we'll see. We'll see. It's a new year. It's a new format. And it's the same old pain that we're all in. So on today's show, we're going to hear about the dramatic demise of Empress Fausta in 326 AD in the Roman Empire. And we're also going to hear about one woman's experience waking up at her own funeral. And as always, we have some triggering content warnings in this episode. We'll be talking about death, obviously, autopsies, abortions, being buried alive, and maybe some torture thrown in too. So it's going to be a fun episode of Cadaver Gals. So again, thank you for coming on our journey and listening.
Cadaver Gals!
Okay, so Nika, tell us about this fierce Queen Empress Fausta and her death.
Yeah.
What's up with her? Who is she?
Well, I've always wanted to be like a goddess or a queen of some sort. That's just like been something in my heart. And I feel like I could have done really well during that time being that. So
I think so too. I agree with that.
Oh, thank you.
Like in the year 300, you're like, that was going to be my year.
New year, new me, the year 300. I mean, I just feel like I, as a person, want to be in a toga being fed grapes and, like, admired and adored. Like, that's just what I would like. So I'm very interested in ancient Rome, ancient Greece, ancient history in general, specifically empresses and queens and women. And so this is about Flavia Maxima Fausta, who was a Roman empress in the 4th century. So she was born in 289 A.D., and she was married off by her father, who was an emperor, Emperor Maximian, at 18 years old to Constantine I, who was 35 at the time. Age difference?
18 does seem like fairly respectable comparatively.
That's
true. You
know,
at least she wasn't like 13 for sure. Or 12.
Well, why was he so old then?
Because this is actually his second wife. And okay. it was a marriage to seal control of the Tetrarchy, which was basically the system of the government at the time where they had like two senior emperors, one of them being Maximian, and then two junior emperors, one of them being Constantine I. So they married them as kind of like to seal the deal. But they actually ended up being really good at being married to each other. He liked her at first, and that was
they did
great.
A good job.
So much that he left his first wife for her. So, yeah, they were happy. She was loyal. She even proved her loyalty to him when she found out that her dad, Maximian, the emperor, was hatching a plot against her husband, Constantine I. And so she told her husband, hey, babe, like, my dad's trying to kill you. And her husband was like, oh, babe, thanks. And
babe.
Yeah, babe. And then Constantine I basically came up to Maximian and was like, I think you should kill yourself. And Maximian was like, you're right. And then did so in 310 AD.
I think that's exactly how the conversation went. Just like, yeah, hey, dude. Yeah. And he's like, cool. Good idea. You're right.
Yes. That's a great idea. I'll just kill myself.
Yeah, exactly. So really interesting family dynamic going on here. But this is just to say that they had a really good relationship for some time. And then
they had each other's backs, at least.
They did. They had each other's backs. Because people be backstabbing back then, you know?
Yeah, they were.
Literally, like, stabbing people in the back.
Literally stabbing.
Like, all over.
Yeah.
They just love doing that shit.
Literally. So something we need to know about Constantine I is that he had an illegitimate son. His name was Crispus, which is just such a fun name, that he had with his first wife. His first wife was a concubine. So technically, because it wasn't a royal marriage, that's considered an illegitimate son, essentially.
Sorry. No, I just think it's really interesting that, like, you can have a child and it's like, that's not a legit child. Like, no, it's,
yeah,
you know, it's...
He didn't have the street cred. So Crispus even though he was illegitimate, people actually loved him. He ended up doing really good at war, at the wars back then.
He was good at war, okay.
He was good at war. No, he was strategic and powerful and successful, and people actually ended up really liking him, and his dad was very fond of him. Like, it was written that that is what was happening. It wasn't like some, oh no, my terrible Quasimodo son, fuck off. Like, that's not what happened. So suddenly, this is just strange, that suddenly, in 326 AD, he was 21 at the time, he and Empress Fausta were killed by Constantine I. Crispus was poisoned in a town far away from Rome called Pola, and Empress Fausta was actually boiled to death.
Oh, no. How old was she at the time?
36.
So what happened? Why were they both killed?
Well, something was going on between them.
You know it. You know there was.
Exactly. So a couple of things. Both of those ways are very weird ways of dying back then. Boiling to death wasn't really a torture method during Constantine I's reign. Boiling to death in oil was a method Emperor Nero used, but that was back in like the early decades, like 40s or 50s AD. Boiling to death was not a thing. And also, she was killed in a bathroom, which, again, that doesn't signify torture. Also, Crispus's death was kind of strange because it was out in, like, middle of nowhere, far away from Rome. And we don't know if he was, if it was suicide or if he was poisoned by someone, if he was on his way to exile. Like, there's a lot of, what happened? But historians surmise, here's where it goes. He and Fausta had a thing. Because the only other time that Constantine condemned someone to exile and over there to Pola, to that town, was for infidelity. So it's, and also he and Fausta, he being Crispus, were sentenced to damnatio memoriae, which is the worst possible sentence in ancient Roman history, which is basically your name is carved off of literally everything. Constantine I tried to erase all traces of them existing. They were chiseled off of little monuments. They were taken off books. They were taken off, like, scribes. Like, it was just a really hard thing to do back then. So it was only done when people were found in very unforgivable positions.
Like, now we just delete their numbers, block them on social media. But then they had to, like, go and... There was, like, more manual labor involved with that.
Yeah. Absolutely. They had to, like, unchisel rocks. Do you know how long it takes to chisel a rock?
I don't, actually, because I've never done it.
Probably a long time, you know? And I mean, that's why, like, I, a few years ago, had to stop making statues of all of my lovers because it became too irritating to erase them.
Gabby, that sounds really dreamy. I want you to make a statue of me. What do I have to do? Okay. My dreams of wanting to be a goddess. It's fine. Anyway, so obviously because they were condemned to this, something really bad must have happened. And multiple ancient Roman historians, although they were a little prone to be dramatic, the story runs true that he and Fausta had a thing.
Okay.
Now, Constantine I never actually gave an official explanation to what happened because Constantine I was the first Christian ancient Roman emperor. So him being caught in anything like this is just problematic, understandably. Not much has changed. So we don't know a lot, but here's a couple of theories. So one is that Fausta actually tricked Constantine I into killing Crispus because Crispus was going to be the heir of the ancient Roman Empire that Constantine was controlling. Fausta gave Constantine 3 sons and 2 daughters. So she had her sons to look out for, and she wanted them to be heirs.
Obviously.
Exactly. So it seems like one theory is that she convinced Constantine I to kill off Crispus by saying that Crispus raped her. And then Constantine I obviously killed him off. And then Helena, his mother, was like, "Why did you kill off my grandson? That's terrible. Also, she tricked you." And then he killed her. But there are a couple of things that don't line up with that theory, particularly the exile and the way that Fausta died is just very strange. So then I read this Cambridge paper, which actually gives a much more interesting and kind of historically correct explanation, but it's a little bit bananas. So I'm going to take you on a journey.
I just love it when people just can't get over deaths from, like, forever ago. It just, like, really, it just entertains me.
You know, you're talking about us when you say that.
Fair enough.
Well, also, I think this also proves that Constantine did a bad job of erasing them. So,
yeah.
Come on, man.
I am grateful.
You can never actually erase your past.
Wow. That's a theme. We're getting real deep. I'm really grateful for all the ancient Roman historians that were here for the tea, specifically the pagans, because the pagans were the ones who wanted to actually get the real story out. The Christians were like, no, nothing happened. It was fine. The pagans are like, listen, they were fucking, I don't know what to tell you. So back then, baths were kind of known to be more than just like, oh, let's get clean. Cleanliness was actually not that big of a deal back then. They were also seen as medical treatments. And this second century physician called Serenus recommended that hot baths be used to induce abortions and to expel the contents of the vagina. We know that doesn't necessarily work, obviously, but they didn't know that back then. They thought that cold water would close the vagina and hot water would open it.
Oh, just like your pores.
Yeah. The vagina is one big pore.
Oh, no, I don't like that imagery as much.
Sorry. So he recommended that. A lot of people tried those methods. There were also worse methods of abortion that involved big kind of tong-like metal skewer things that they would use to open up the canal and pull the fetus out. There were also herbs. They also said one time that if you jumped and kicked your buttocks, you would get rid of the baby. So a lot of different abortion methods were going on back then, but hot water was apparently a thing. Now, the way that Fausta died, an overheated bath, kind of goes along the lines of an abortion. But abortions were very deadly back then. They were, like, not safe at all. And because they were not safe at all, it kind of was considered a suicide at that point. And many unwanted pregnancies, they never actually tried to get aborted. They just would do this thing called abandoning children.
called tossing away their babies.
I mean, literally, they would have the baby because apparently it was easier to have it than to try to get rid of it. And and then leave the baby out on the street and just let it fend for itself, which how much can a newborn fend for itself?
They can't.
Exactly.
I'm just imagining a newborn just like in a little suit with a cane being like, you know, it's hard out here on the streets, you know. I mean, I feel like the Romans are known for like their birth control, but at the same time they would do things like they had condoms and stuff, but then they also would do things like glue or attach a like fox genitals to their foreheads, and that would like ward off pregnancy or something. So
love that.
That's cute. That's a great image,
yeah,
right
shout
there.
Out.
The first furry. Why do I always bring up furries?
They're like, hang on, be right back. I gotta go catch a fox. Like yeah. What?
Taylor mentioned this to me on a call recently. Viewers, listeners,
oh,
not
scared.
Viewers. No. You mentioned that herb, and so I looked it up because Romans did have some birth control methods, and the herb it was an herb called silphium, and sadly it's now extinct because the Romans were too horny. And use it all the time. But basically, that herb was so powerful that it would immediately induce menstruation. And so it would be like an abortion.
It's like Plan B.
Exactly. Like a Plan B, basically. But it was also used like monthly. You would have like a pea-sized amount of this herb once a month. And it was like really good at preventing pregnancy, essentially. Which like I wish we had that now. But the Romans were greedy and just took all of it. And then it's actually funny. The emperor that I mentioned before, the one who would boil Christians in hot oil, Nero, he had the last ever herb because obviously it went extinct, and Pliny the Elder gave it to him, who he was like a scribe, and Nero immediately ate it.
Like the last one.
How rude. Oh my God.
Like here is the last perfect herb of this, and then Nero just put it in his mouth. He wasn't even a girl.
Question.
He didn't even need it. Yeah.
I mean, with Nero, though, we can't go back and ask him his intention necessarily, but you know, what if he was trying to do male birth control? You know, he's setting a really great example.
Okay, don't try to paint Nero as some progressive king, because I know he was not.
Yeah, because wasn't he known as, like, he was, like, the most vicious of the emperors? But you know what?
He literally, like, yeah. He, like, slaughtered, like, many people, mostly Christians, because they were trying to get Christianity in there. I don't know. I guess he saw something in that. Anyway.
But no, now he's the poster child of male birth control in my book.
Exactly. Liberal king. Anyway. No, but so So they were pretty deadly back then. Like, they didn't happen. People would just abandon their kids. However, Fausta couldn't abandon a kid because what if the kid comes back and is like, hey, I'm a royal, and then that puts shame upon their families and stuff. So this historian from Cambridge surmises that Constantine I found out about the affair via Fausta getting pregnant, showing that she was pregnant, and Constantine I was out doing wars or whatever. And then he was like, you need to get rid of that baby immediately. Exiled his son and sent him off to this faraway land, and then asked his mother, Helena, because Helena always appears in the stories, to force an abortion on this woman, the empress, that eventually killed her by overheating in the bath.
Wow.
I feel like this is juicier than Romeo and Juliet, you know? It's like some star-crossed lovers. Also the beginning of, you know, stepmom, stepson relations. The origin story.
Pornhub loves that. Yeah.
Well, Nika, now that we're all revisionist historians, you know, what is kind of your preferred way of looking back at this history?
Listen, I'm all for a weird family dynamic, so I just kind of love it. I'm kind of living through it a little bit. I also think it's kind of, I don't know, it's just fun and flirty. It's hot. She, like, I mean.
It was hot. That's how she died.
It was hot, mm-hmm. And that's how she died. No, it's terrible. It's really sad. But, like, women back then were pawns for these kings, right? Like, they were literally just given as ways to form alliances or whatever. So I think she did really well for the amount of time that she ruled and for the amount of time that she was alive. Because 36 was a good amount of time to be alive back then. Congrats to her.
And she had a geriatric pregnancy. Good for her.
Yeah.
Honestly.
For real.
Good for her.
Okay, Nika, that was an excellent story. Thank you so much for telling us about this badass empress. And this is Cadaver Gals. And we'll be right back. Okay, we're back. It's Cadaver Gals. And Nika was telling us about hashtag girl boss Empress Fausta and her quite horrific demise there in the hot bath. And so that got us to thinking about, like, you know, what actually happens when you are boiled alive. And it seems that being boiled alive, obviously that was like Emperor Nero's type thing. That's something he liked to do. And then it seems like in history, I mean, it's not, it hasn't been like that common of an execution style, but in the 16th century with, you know, our favorite King Henry VIII, who killed all of his wives, he actually, during his reign, he did make boiling people alive a capital punishment that was used for usually like thieves or people who poisoned other people. So, you know, he seemed like a cool dude doing that. And there's been cases like kind of more recently of people being boiled alive. A lot of that is like people accidentally falling into a hot spring or people roasting in their tubs, you know, getting a little drunk or high and then falling asleep and then something is wrong with their water pressure. And then also it has been used, there's been some other sort of terrorist organizations who have used boiling alive. But it sounds like a very unpleasant experience. And so we were kind of looking up what actually happens to your body when you're boiled alive. And it sounds very bad because the main takeaway that I took is that you are mostly conscious the whole time it's happening. And it's going to take like, I mean, in best case scenario, it's going to take about 30 minutes. But usually it can last up to like 3 hours of you boiling alive.
That's, I mean,
not right.
Yeah.
You're boiling meat.
Yeah. You're basically being essentially poached, you know? You're like a poached egg.
I love a good poached egg, though.
And I was,
that right now.
And the thing I was thinking about this, I was like, because I was sitting in a hot tub recently, not to brag, and it was kind of, I was looking at first I was looking on some like, I was like looking at some hot tub, like safety websites to make sure, and it seems like I was kind of in a dangerous situation because I did roast in there for about an hour, and you know, usually it's recommended like 30 minutes, keep the temperature at 104 or less, and I mean, kind of like with Fausta, they do recommend if you're, you know, pregnant not to stay in too long, because you are actually, every time you're in a hot tub, you are slightly cooking yourself, just a little bit, you know? So we've all been cooked a little bit, and that's kind of frightening to think about. Goodness. You know, like when you're...
That is terrifying.
Like if you're in a hot bath, that is kind of like the first sign of you cooking a little bit, so.
Well, my mom always said growing up, like if I didn't feel good or like had a cold or something, she would be like, just take a hot bath. And so she's like, go cook yourself.
Go cook yourself.
Well, because you're cooking from the inside out. I think I've read that like the liquids inside of your body, they boil. And so then they start boiling your organs, like your stomach and your heart and all your intestines just start boiling and cooking.
I don't like this.
Yeah.
I don't like that.
I read that the smell is like a sweet, musky smell because your meat.
Yep. Your meat's cooking. Yeah. And also, I mean, it depends, of course. Are you being boiled in oil? What are you being boiled in? And it seems sort of what happens is you have three different layers of skin. You also have like this fatty layer in your skin and the fat kind of starts cooking, and that kind of turns into this like gooey. You become very gooey, and then your skin also gets a little leathery. And then I read this one metaphor this one imagery that I really hated, which was like, imagine when you boil a hot dog, and you know when the hot dog, when it gets super hot, it kind of cracks a little bit, and that's
it's splitting open.
That can happen to you as well.
I really hate that.
I know.
I hate that.
If I were to be boiled, though, I would want to be boiled in coconut oil because I'm a healthy queen.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, maybe your skin would – I feel like your skin would still crack, though. The other imagery is our blood boils at around the same as water, about 212 degrees, but a little bit hotter just because we have salt content running throughout us. And if you are being boiled alive, it does seem – if you want a quicker death, if you put your head underwater, because then your brain will boil a little bit faster.
Oh, no.
You know?
No. That hurts my head. That hurts a lot of things.
And anyway, so sitting in the boiling vat of whatever you're in, you will very likely go blind because your eyes will start to melt. And then it will start to breathe because you'll also be surrounded by all of this steam. And you will still be conscious for a lot of it. Eventually, you will be burned enough so that your nerve endings do burn off, but that does take a little bit.
I have a new fear now. Thank you for this.
We're never taking baths again. And then and eventually, you should go into shock, and then shock, what happens with your body is then your organs begin to fail, your heartbeat softens, your breath becomes more shallow, and then hopefully you don't feel anything anymore, and your organs are boiled and cooked. So sounds,
and then you're done.
So I think that visceral description makes us feel even more sympathetic towards Empress Fausta, and I really hope that no one experiences being boiled alive. And also, I have probably made all three of us not want to take baths anytime soon.
No cold showers from here moving forward,
but you should be safe. Like, there's, it seems that a dangerous level of heat is as little as 140 degrees Fahrenheit. That's where that can cause third degree burns. So just make sure your water heater is set so that it doesn't get too hot, and don't really go above 104 degrees. Otherwise, you know, it's a slow cook for you.
My water at my house gets really hot. I know how to turn it down, and I have turned it down before, but it still gets really hot. I want to turn it down a bunch more now.
Someone help her. Someone help her before she cooks.
No, I can do it myself, okay? I am a independent woman who can do it, but
Taylor, remember how I told you my water heater was broken last November when I first got my house? It's still broken. So I don't have that problem. It's because I haven't fixed it yet, because I am not an independent woman like Taylor.
I'll come over and I'll help you.
Thank you.
Nake is just waiting for her emperor, and then for her daddy to try to kill that emperor, and then that emperor, and then she being like, emperor, my dad's going to kill you, you know.
Yeah, I just want to relive it, TBH.
So now that we've heard this really fun description of being boiled alive, Taylor has another story for us. So Taylor, take it away.
Yes. Okay. So I came across an article the other day of a Russian woman. We're going to call her Faye. So in 2011, Faye was taken to the hospital. She thought she was having a heart attack. So she was like, hey, like, help me out. Like, her husband brought her in, and they were like, yep, seems like it was a heart attack. And then she died. So as you do, you plan a funeral, your friends and family come, and they pay their respects, etc. There was an open casket at the wake. Everybody's kind of like saying they're, you know, making speeches, like saying, doing prayers and stuff. And Faye sits up, like realizes where she is at her own funeral, and just like starts screaming.
Oh, no.
And then like her friends and family say that her eyes kind of like fluttered, and then she just like stopped. So panic ensues because people are like, oh, my God, she's not dead. she's in the casket and she was just screaming.
I can't. That's like a terrible nightmare.
It's an awful nightmare. I had that nightmare not that long ago.
But can you imagine, like, people saying nice things about you and, like, your crush saying that he finally, like, actually loves you, and then you wake up. You're like, okay, I'm back.
She was married, so she didn't have that. But apparently there were, like, a decent amount of people there, yeah, and they were all very freaked out, as one could imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're having to deal with the fact that you've lost your friend or your family member. And then you see them go through this, like, horrific experience of, like, waking up at their funeral. Anyway, so obviously they take her back to the hospital and she dies there for real after 12 minutes of a real heart attack. The other one was real, but she died again of a heart attack.
Like, she was so real this shocked time. From waking up at her funeral, yeah. That then she died.
I would have a heart attack if I woke up at my funeral. Please make sure I'm dead before any of that happens.
Will do.
I mean, though, can you, like, imagine, like, her husband? Because it's like, you know, you take your wife to the hospital. They say that she's passed from a heart attack, and then she wakes up. I mean, like, that makes it seem like there could have been something that could have been done so that she could have stayed alive.
Yeah, her husband was really mad. I mean, he was outraged. And there's not a great deal of, like, the specifics of, like, how she was wrongfully declared dead or anything like that. But, like, I would imagine all of those details are kind of vague to protect both the family and the doctors, I guess.
Well, didn't he, like, sued the hospital? Because, I mean, that would be the first thing, yeah, obviously, you would do is just, like, fuck this hospital. You
totally
could have saved my wife.
Yeah, and they didn't. So I'm like, how does that even happen? I mean, this was 2011. It's not like back in the day where you just, like, I don't know what they did. Like, did they check a pulse? I don't even know. They just looked at them and, like, oh, it looks like they're dead, you know? And then somebody comes by and they bring the wheelbarrow and they say, bring out your dad, just, you know? And then
the whole world was a Monty Python movie back in the day.
No, you plant a true love's kiss. And if they don't wake up, then that's how you know they're dead for sure.
Oh, right. That's right. That's what happens. But hopefully you can find their true love. Because what if he doesn't exist? And then they just keep you in this, like, glass case? That's also horrific.
Oh.
That's just, like,
Taylor's okay. Just going through her fears right now.
This is, like, it's, like, the funeral that never ends in that scenario.
Taylor's like, why don't I need to find my true love? And everyone's like, oh, you must be lonely. She's like, no. What if I die and then someone tries to revive me and they can't?
Yeah, exactly. I need them to kiss me. So I was like, how can you misdiagnose a death? So anyway, medically speaking, there are, like, two ways you die. So the first thing is a cardiopulmonary death, which is where you either stop breathing or your heart stops beating. So that could be, like, a multitude of reasons, you know, like, literally almost anything. But the second is brain death, which is just a loss of brain function. And, like, you know, you have to be basically a coma. So those are two very broad things, but to me, from my non-medical opinion, it seems like they probably were assuming some sort of cardiopulmonary death where she wasn't breathing or her heart wasn't beating. So this has actually happened before. It's super rare to misdiagnose a death, but it does happen. It does happen, okay? So there has been instances where the pulse is so low that it can't be detected. But there are other instances where people came back alive. So basically, your heart auto-jumps itself, but it's usually, like, no more than, like, 90 seconds. So they try and say, like, wait at least 5 minutes before you actually declare death, because your heart could essentially, like, reboot itself.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's like it does CPR on itself because it realizes that it's, like, dying. Because of the pulse being really low.
Can you imagine looking at a doctor and being like, well, can you just try turning it on and off again? Like, all you have to do is reboot it.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, no.
I mean, that's kind of what CPR is. It's like rebooting the heart, right?
We're all just machines.
I mean, it feels like CPR is like the jumper cables of the heart.
Yeah.
Like that. Yep.
Exactly. But it can kind of, like, do it. It can kind of do it on its own. But, like, that, I don't think that happens very often. And then there's also, like, a frozen death, which is by way of either extremely low body temperature, so you're, like, you freeze, or, like, you know, you freeze by, like, drugs or something. So, like, you're just, like, not in a normal state. So typically you need to go like they you need to like get the body back to a normal state before you determine that before you declare that there's that they're dead or anything. So if and only if a combination of these things could have happened, right? You know, she had a super low pulse that they weren't able to detect. And so they quickly like they're like, all right, well, let's send her to the morgue. The morgue is essentially a freezer. And then she's at her funeral. She her body returns back to its natural state and her heart has like rebooted itself or whatever. And that's when she wakes up, which is horrifying. So in a way, she like dies, wakes back up and dies again.
I'm really happy it happened. Well, I don't know. I'm just happy she wasn't buried and then woke up.
So that's actually a pretty common fear that people have of being buried alive. I mean, it was a way more common like earlier on when people were being misdiagnosed with death all the time. But that fear is called tapophobia. And it comes from the Greek word tapos, which means tomb. And somehow tomb is just like a creepy word, like thinking of being like trapped in a tomb alive or something. I don't know.
Tomb just feels very final.
Well, speaking of being buried alive, we're going to talk a little bit more about that and how you could avoid it or escape from being buried alive. It is unlikely, but we have some hot tips. All right, this is Cadaver Gals. We'll be right back. Okay, welcome back, Cadaver Gals. Here we are. And we're going to talk a little bit about what to do if you're buried alive. And it seems that the main thing is that you should first take some preventative measures, which obviously you should do, you know, in advance of any sort of event that people might suspect that you are dead. But also if you'd been abducted by the Russian mob and they're the ones who buried you alive, that's a whole different situation.
I don't know. I don't know what to tell you about that.
I don't know what to do with that.
That's above my pay grade.
Russian mob, no offense if you're listening. So throughout history, there have been people have had this fear that Taylor was mentioning of being buried alive. And sort of in the 19th century, it seems what was very popular was to make a safety coffin. So Taylor, do you want to tell us what that is?
Yeah. So a safety coffin was basically where you would have like a bell that would and like a in a breathing tube. So you'd have a little bell. So if you wake up, you got your little bell, you ring it, and then hopefully somebody hears it, I guess, and then knows that you're alive. For me, I was like, what if there's, I mean, I feel like there are other things that could happen to make that bell ring.
Like the wind.
Yeah. I mean, the wind or like, you know.
Wouldn't the bell have to ring a lot, though, for someone to know that someone was
not necessarily. I mean, you're, because like if you have a breathing tube, the breathing tube isn't that big. So you're probably pretty weak having been in a coffin and been buried.
I would be right? Ringing that thing like it is December before Christmas and like I'm a Salvation Army like ring-a-ling-linger. I don't, like donations here, sir.
The Paul Revere of bell ringers. You're like, yep, I'm ringing exactly. That bell. But, I mean, also it was back in the day, like the Victorians, they loved picnicking in graveyards and at cemeteries. So you know what? There's probably always a group of like fun ladies picnicking. And they're like, oh, a bell's ringing. Oh, look at that.
So actually, there's this man in Vermont. Like, it's still there. His name is Tim Smith, and he designed his own tomb because he had tapophobia so bad. And he was a doctor, and he was like, I'm not going to let this happen to me. Like, he was like, I am going to create this tomb to where I can get out. So he had his little bell. He had the bell, and he also had a window that he wanted people to come check on him so that, like, you can look in. So the window still exists today, but you can't see through it because there's like condensation and stuff. He did not think of that. But yeah, it had a window so people could check on him. It had a bell. There was a stairway so that he could kind of like if he woke up, he could climb out. And then, of course, the breathing tube so he could have some air.
I guess he just needed a dehumidifier, alas.
I know, that's all he needed.
I mean, this was kind of all in like the 19th century where these were like super popular. But if we like fast forward to today, there could be some other things. I mean, like millennials, Gen Z, we're all so attached to our phones that I feel like it would be respectful for us to be buried with our phones. So, you know, basically,
yeah, totally.
You should like juice up, you should, whoever the deceased is, juice up their phone, keep it on, bury them with their phone.
You could get like a wind turbine or something to like, so you could have like a charging device in your coffin too, so that it could like always be charged.
Yeah. How eco-friendly.
Get some,
so
wouldn't die. Get some Wi-Fi.
Knowing me, I would wake up and then I'd be like, ooh, TikTok, and then scroll for like an hour.
Before. And you're like, oh, I need to get out of here. What is also important is it would be cool if you could be buried with some sort of tools so that you could get out. So like, for example, if you had like a knife or something, or if you were buried in high heels, a heel will work really well because basically you need something to help you get through the coffin. But you're basically fucked though if like you're buried in sort of a more expensive hardwood coffin. Like there's really not much you can do besides sort of like knocking on it and hoping someone hears you.
But you're like 6 feet under.
Yeah, you're 6 feet under, so you gotta knock really hard. Also, you do have, I was kind of surprised at this, you do have a longer period of time than I thought to actually be able to escape before you run out of air. So basically the size of the average coffin, based on sort of the space, the area, math, science and stuff, basically,
math stuff, yeah.
Basically, calculations you happened. Have about 30 hours after you're buried to get out. Because then you will have run out of air.
That is more than I thought.
Yeah, but the caveat of that, though, is that is if you are breathing at a normal rate. Obviously, if you wake up buried alive, you're going to have a little bit of a panic situation. But it's funny when you read these articles about like how to escape being buried alive. They're like, stay calm. Just stay calm in that moment.
Yeah, that's yeah. Don't be depressed.
Yeah.
Stay calm.
So some other preventative things is you should do throughout your life. You should do trauma work. You should do some panic work. You know, figure out treatments for your anxiety just in case so that you're good to go into a calm space when you need to figure out how to break out. And so the thing is you also need to make sure, since you obviously can't get out of the nice coffins, you need to be in like a plywood coffin. I was saying, I was like, if I get buried, like just put me in a sack, okay?
Oh, yeah, save some money too, you know?
Just like throw me in the dirt. We don't even need a sack.
Oh no, Gabby.
I think Gabby deserves a marble coffin.
No, you're just trying to bury me alive. No, yeah. I request. I mean, it's very eco-friendly if it's just your body, you know, or it's just a sack.
They do have those pods and they like turn you into a tree. Like you're like basically like in the roots and then you kind of grow into a tree. And so, I mean, they're still like burial plots, but it's a forest.
I just want to be tree food when I grow up.
But so now that if you have these parameters where you're like keeping calm, you're in a coffin that you could actually break out of, the first thing you need to do is somehow remove your shirt and then wrap your shirt around your head because you want to make sure you can like block your airwaves from any dirt that will be piling into the coffin once you break out of it. And then you need to attack the middle of the coffin at the top because that is the part of least resistance.
Scooch down.
Least structurally sound. Yeah, so you just need to pop through. So what you're going to be doing is you're going to be kicking, trying to pop through the middle of it. And as the dirt starts rushing in, you need to try to push the dirt to the end of the coffin so that it's not piling up on top of you. And then once it starts filling up that way, push it off to the sides. When you have a hole that's big enough, that's when you need to sit up. And then just start pushing your way out. And since you were recently interned, the soil should be pretty loose and you should be able to get out. But then as you're busting through the top, you need to make sure you do some sort of creepy pose so if anyone's around, you can like scare them. Think of the theatrics as well. Keep calm, be theatrical, be strong.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, think of your end pose. That will hopefully keep you calm and like distract your mind from the fact that you've just woken up inside of a coffin under 6 feet of dirt.
Can you imagine breaking out of a coffin and going up 6 feet of dirt and then immediately twerking?
But I think that's a good point, Taylor. I think if you can visualize, you think of this as a performance instead of you trying to save your own life. I mean, you can also think about all the people who you want to punch in the face who buried you before you were actually dead.
You can think about how much money you'll make when suing the hospital for wrongfully calling
you dead.
There's
so many people you could sue.
Oh, the possibilities. That's the American dream, is it not?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Let the spite and the hatred really help you break out of your coffin.
That's a metaphor for 2021.
It's the metaphor. Well, how has what we've learned today helped us with our own mortality? Or has it made it worse? It might have made it worse.
I think it's worse now. Now I'm like going to be miserable taking cold showers and cold baths. And now I'm going to get a safety coffin. Oh, they do have modern ones now that it's a button and it has a light. Less satisfying than a little ring-a-ding.
I like your little ring-a-ding. I think it's theatrical.
Yeah, I think I might get one of those little lights or a little ring-a-ding. Why not?
It literally sounds like you're talking about lingerie. Like, I might get one.
I might get myself.
Be sexy.
Well, we're scared of baths and we're scared of being buried. Probably better than being cremated prematurely. Well, maybe not.
I don't know. It all sounds very miserable. But I think, look, these are all pretty low. Like, it's not going to happen. Like, the chances are pretty low that you're going to be buried alive.
Yeah, there's literally no statistics on it because it's happened so rarely, or it's happened and no one successfully got out of their coffin, obviously.
Yeah.
And it is very unlikely.
Those stories were gruesome.
Very unlikely in sort of our medical landscape now to be misdiagnosed as dead. Also, very few people seem to use boiling alive. So I guess just don't get involved with terrorist organizations is also another good lesson from this podcast today.
Mm-hmm. That's a good lesson in life. I hope that everybody knows that already, but
don't get involved with terrorism. This has been another episode of Cadaver Gals. Thanks for joining us.
Cadaver Gals.
Cadaver Gals is a production of School of Humans and iHeartRadio. It's hosted, produced, mixed, research, etc. by Gabby Watts, Nika Duarte, and Taylor Church. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter @CadaverGals. Thanks for listening.